bamboo cane.
You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the April 6, 2022 reading of the Environment Program. I'm Karen Wheeler, and today we will be reading the following main articles. In a first, scientists use drones to detect pregnant dolphins. Written by Jill Langlois for Smithsonian Magazine Online. The Queen of Manta, Who Became a Force of Nature. Written by Gemma Tarlac for the Environment section of Atlas Obscura. And of course, if we have time, following up with miscellaneous articles. First up, in a first, scientists use drones to detect pregnant dolphins. Researchers say the new tech will help them better understand bottlenose dolphin reproduction. By Jill Langlois for Smithsonian Magazine Online. As a marine biologist and ecologist, Barbara Cheney looked out upon the waters off the coast of Scotland. She was concerned. Her team of researchers from the University of Aberdeen's Lighthouse Field Station and Duke University's Marine Robotics and Remote Sensing Lab had chosen this day in July 2017 to head out onto the open water and capture images and scans of bottlenose dolphins by way of drone because it was expected to have clear skies and calm waters. The water was still, but the team worried that morning about glare reflecting off the surface of the sea, which might impact a clean view of the species. The team couldn't dawdle because the dolphins might not stay long. The dolphins are a protected species living in a conservation area, and due to permitting, the researchers had a limited amount of time to complete their work. Some 10 minutes after taking to the water, the team reached a well-known dolphin hotspot in the North Sea. There they sat for some time, watching the cetaceans in the tranquil water before the team decided to risk taking shots that might be affected by glare. When Julian Dale, an associate in research at Duke and the team's drone pilot, said, "Oh, let's give it a go." Their goal? Seeing if their drone data could determine if any of the dolphins were pregnant. Scientists from Aberdeen have been monitoring the bottlenose dolphin population in the Moray Firth Special Area of Conservation for more than 30 years, using photo identification of dorsal fins and their markings to identify individual dolphins and follow their progress. They've been able to measure the length of the dolphins with these photos, but without a bird's-eye view of the body, it was impossible to determine if a female was pregnant. Aerial photographs from a drone and scans from a separate camera would provide researchers with visuals of the dolphins' length and width, as well as the outline of their bodies and their markings. A pregnant mother would be much easier to identify. "We really didn't know if this was going to work," Cheney says. "A lot of work with drones has been done either farther offshore or in tropical areas where you get beautiful clear waters." The researchers were operating their drone above temperate waters, which tend to be murky. Teams like Cheney's usually only know whether dolphins are pregnant after the fact by seeing calves with the mothers. As a result, failed pregnancies and calf deaths shortly after birth are rarely recorded. That information is crucial to understanding what environmental factors might be affecting reproduction. Back on shore, Dale uploaded the drone-captured images to a computer for Cheney to see. As she waited, she felt tense. But when the photographs began to appear on the screen, she stopped worrying. The water was crystal clear, and so were the images. The photos looked perfect for analysis. With the use of drone technology, the researchers were able to gather enough information about the pregnancy status of these female bottlenose dolphins, a feat that had yet to be done with small cetaceans. These findings, published in the February 2022 in Remote Sensing in Ecology and Conservation, could lead to breakthroughs in scientists' understanding of bottlenose dolphin reproduction. Determining the pregnancy status of a species like the bottlenose dolphin is crucial, as it can provide information on reproductive failure, which can further be linked to other parameters like age of the female and environmental conditions, says Severine Methion, a research scientist at the Bottlenose Dolphin Research Institute who was not part of this study. While this isn't the first time drones have been used to study marine mammals, the technology has helped scientists learn more about the complex social lives of a group of killer whales in the Pacific Northwest. This is the first time they were used to look at much smaller cetaceans. During the study, 5 boat-based surveys were carried out in July and August of 2017. They chose midsummer, knowing more dolphins would be present in the area and that any pregnancies would be far along. Because the bottlenose dolphins in the area are a protected population, the team not only had to be licensed to fly the drone, but also to be on the water with the dolphins, where they had a limited amount of time to gather the required data. Per Dr. Cheney, the researchers can only spend 20 hours a month capturing images. As photographs were being taken, 2 lasers scanned the dolphin bodies, data the researchers used to calculate measurements back in the lab. The team identified 64 bottlenose dolphins. Using the body width-length ratios, the researchers correctly determined that 14 dolphins were pregnant. Just one that was thought to be not pregnant was actually carrying a baby. Following the success of this study, the team plans to do another round of photo identification surveys this May, in addition to more drone surveys this July and August. With regular studies of the dolphin population, they'll be able to compare the data collected, giving them a more accurate picture of the progression of pregnancy and which environmental factors, like water temperature, availability of prey, might be affecting birth rate. With more detailed information from regular drone studies, they'll be able to spot blips in data much sooner than they have in the past. If we can do this more often, says Cheney, we might see the effects of declining prey or increased disturbance or something like that in a much shorter period of time and be able to do something about it before it's too late. The Queen of the Mantas, who became a force of nature. Lauded for her research on gentle giants of the sea, Andrea Marshall is using her fame to find hope for our troubled oceans. By Gemma Tarlac. The girl, not even a teenager yet, plunged into the ocean from the boat, trading the easy oxygen of the terrestrial world for air from the tank strapped to her back. At age 12, Andrea Marshall was making her last certification dive, a landmark moment in a lifelong obsession with every living thing in the sea and the irresistible world they occupy. That tiny little biologist inside of me wanted to talk with each and every one of them, Marshall said during her TED Talk back in 2012. In the decades since stepping off that boat, Marshall would realize her childhood dream of becoming a marine biologist, with thousands of field dives to her credit. After studying in her native United States and then Australia, she relocated to Mozambique, where she has emerged as a leading voice in the protection of our oceans. What she has called a, quote, wondrous liquid frontier. Early on, Marshall's research focused on mantas, the biggest rays in the world. Mantas have the largest brain of any fish relative to body size, and those bodies can be more than 25 feet across. The plankton eaters are harmless to humans, but very curious about what we're doing in their world, and, says Marshall, often they initiate play with divers. Her groundbreaking work has included identifying new manta species, spearheading innovative tag and track projects, and creating genetic libraries of these giant yet enigmatic animals. BBC and other media outlets crowned Marshall the Queen of the Mantas, but even as she embraced the title, Marshall's focus was expanding. The more discoveries she made about mantas and other animals she had yearned to communicate with as a child, the more she realized the message they had for her was help. Human activities such as overfishing, habitat degradation, and climate change have caused the populations of mantas and countless other marine species to plummet. But mantas are also specifically targeted for use in unfounded traditional Chinese medicine concoctions. In 2019, Marshall led the scientific assessment that updated the giant manta's status from vulnerable to endangered on the IUCN Red List. The work reflected both her expertise on these gentle giants and her rising status in the field of marine conservation. Marshall and like-minded shark specialist Simon Pierce co-founded the Marine Megafauna Foundation, or MMF, in Mozambique in 2003. The organization has since grown into an international charity and research network devoted to protecting ocean habitats worldwide. Its heart remains in the southeastern African country, however, which is globally recognized for its marine biodiversity, particularly larger species such as rays, sharks, whales, dugongs, and turtles. In January, a stretch of Mozambique coast known as the Inhambane Seascape was designated a hope spot, an area of critical scientific value, by Mission Blue, the global conservation coalition led by renowned oceanographer Sylvia Earle. When making the announcement, Earle singled out Marshall's dedication to the effort. It's the latest achievement by the marine biologist in her mission to make sure the oceans remain full of life that will inspire the next little girl jumping off a boat into wonder. Flamingo number 492 is still on the run 17 years later. A fisherman's sighting in March confirmed that a flamingo that fled a Kansas zoo back in 2005 has defied the odds to live a Pixar-worthy life in the wilds of Texas. Written by Daniel Victor for the Science section of the New York Times. On a windy day in Wichita, Kansas in 2005, number 492 made its escape. The workers at Sedgwick County Zoo had forgotten to clip the African flamingo's wings, a painless bit of maintenance that keeps the beloved birds from flying away into the dangerous world outside. The zoo was unable to retrieve the bird before it flew away from Kansas, facing long odds for survival in a region of the country with no other flamingos and few environments suited for its needs. David Foreman, a machinist and fishing guide in Edna, Texas, didn't know any of this when he and a friend set out on a boat in Port Lavaca on March 10 this year. His customers often claim to see flamingos, mistaking them for the smaller but also pink roseate spoonbills that are common in the Gulf Coast. He patiently explains to them that, no, there are no flamingos in Texas. He has told hundreds of people this, but on this day, he couldn't believe his eyes. There it was, a tall, elegant bird standing on one leg, as flamingos often do. He zoomed his phone's camera in as far as it could go, searching for proof of what seemed unbelievable. My brain was telling me, no way you're looking at a flamingo. But my eyes were telling me, man, that's what it is. There's no mistaking it, said Mr. Foreman, who grew up in a bird sanctuary. He would have to update his spiel, he thought. It's almost like nature's way of putting me in my place, you know, Mr. Foreman said. Mr. Knows Everything thinks there's no flamingos in Texas. Ha! Have a look at this. Wildlife officials in Texas said it was surely number 492. It was so named because one of its legs has worn a tag with that number since it arrived at the zoo from Tanzania in 2003. The officials in Texas have since nicknamed it Pink Floyd. The boaters were too far away to see the tag, but Julie Hagen, a social media specialist with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, said number 492 was spotted in the same area and during the same time of year that it's been spotted in past years. We have no reason to believe that it's any other flamingo, she said. It served as confirmation that number 492, estimated to be about 20 years old, is still persevering despite striking out on its own. Its journey would fit well into a Pixar movie script. Number 492 was one of 40 flamingos to arrive at the Kansas Zoo in 2003. Most of the birds were probably around 3 years old. Scott Newland, curator of the birds at the zoo, said in an interview in 2018. He described feather clipping, the maintenance that keeps the birds grounded, as painless. Quote, no different than you or I getting a haircut. It must be repeated each year as birds molt their feathers and grow new ones. But in June 2005, staff members missed signs that number 492's wings needed to be clipped, and the bird flew away to a drainage canal in Wichita along with another flamingo, number 347. On July 4, yes, seriously, on Independence Day, the birds flew away from Wichita for good. Number 492 heading south and number 347 heading north. Number 347 was never seen again and likely didn't survive the winter. Number 492, though, found a suitable environment in Texas with its shallow, salty wetlands, high temperatures year-round, and ample food sources. It even met a longtime companion, a Caribbean flamingo that may have blown north into the Gulf during a tropical storm, was spotted with number 492 as early as 2006, but they haven't been seen together since 2013. Although they're two different species, they're enough alike that they would have been more than happy to see each other, Mr. Newland said in 2018. Two lonely birds in kind of a foreign habitat, not supposed to be there, so they've stayed together because there's a bond. Flamingos in the wild can live into their 40s. Predators include foxes and bobcats, but since flamingos pose little threat to humans and are not considered game birds, number 492 likely doesn't have to worry about hunters. Ms. Hagen said number 492 has been spotted almost every year, typically in the spring, ever since it found its way to Texas. It's unclear if the flamingo has made Texas its permanent home or if the state is part of a migration pattern that hasn't yet been discovered. Mr. Foreman first posted his video to his own Facebook and Instagram pages, and his friends alerted him to Number 492's backstory and how rare the sighting was. It was, quote, definitely a moment to remember, he said.
A flamingo in South Texas?
Wow, who would have thought? And now an article from the Tree Lines column in the winter-spring 2022 issue of American Forests magazine. In Mexico, moving a forest to save monarchs. In March, as the spring sun drives away cold mist from the mountains of Michoacán, Mexico, tens of millions of monarch butterflies begin to wake up. After a long winter sheltering in oyamel firs, the butterflies flutter about like brilliant orange confetti, readying themselves for a migration that will send them fanning out across North America. It's an absolutely fantastic sight, according to biologist Cuauhtémoc Sáenz Romero, researcher at University of Michoacán. Not only do these forests harbor 99% of the world's monarchs, they're doubly valuable as a source of tourism income for local communities. These days, however, a pall is hanging over this vision in orange. The region's climate is rapidly becoming too hot for the oyamel firs, which can only survive in cool, moist conditions. By the end of the century, Sáenz Romero says, heat, droughts, storms, and pests will have wiped out all oyamel in the monarch butterfly biosphere reserve, along with their cloaks of oyamel-dependent monarchs. To save the firs and the butterflies, Sáenz Romero wants to do something once considered unthinkable, plant a new forest somewhere else. To see the future of Michoacán's oyamel, all you have to do is look up. The mountain's peaks will remain cool and wet, perfect weather for oyamels. In fact, the trees are already reproducing upslope, but Sáenz Romero estimates they'd have to increase their pace by a factor of 10 or even 100 to keep up with the speed of climate change. In partnership with local towns and land collectives, including the non-governmental organization Fondo de Conservación del Eje Neolevo Volcánico, Sáenz Romero is stepping in to pick up the slack. Last July, his team planted oyamel seedlings across five sites of varying altitudes, four of them on Nevado de Toluca, a higher mountain than the Monarch Biosphere Reserve, and will study their survival over the next few years. The challenge is how much we can move the seedlings to a higher altitude without killing them, he says. The hope is that the firs will thrive on even the highest slopes, and that the monarchs can eventually alter their ancient migration routes to follow the oyamel uphill. This is a first-of-its-kind study in Mexico, and similar research is just beginning to gain ground in other countries. Planting trees at higher elevations or to the north of their natural range, a process called assisted migration, was long taboo in conservation circles. Now, as climate change advances at a breakneck pace, it's swiftly becoming clear that many species will go extinct without active relocation. Thank you for joining us for the April 6, 2022 reading of the Environment Program. I'm Karen Wheeler.